This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Studies have shown that 1 in 4 children in Malaysia are survivors of child sexual abuse. Protect and Save the Children is a Malaysian NGO that works to educate communities about child sexual abuse through talks, workshops and programs to improve our country's social safety net. We discuss the work the organization carries out with PSC's founder, Madeleine Yong, and board member, Shireen Zainuddin. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hi.
Madeleine, when and why did you set up PSC?
PS the Children started off as a project in 1999, and we became an organization in 2002. And the reason we became an organization is because there was just a need. You know, every single time we go out and give a talk, there would be somebody saying, you know, I've been sexually abused, or I know of a child who's been sexually abused.
Shireen, why is this cause close to your heart?
Well, I've known Madeleine, you know, for a few years now, and about the work she did. So when Nariza, who's the president of PSC, asked me to join the board, I just jumped at the opportunity because, well, you know, every child, you know, deserves the right to live a happy, healthy life, and that's not happening anywhere. It takes a village, so I think everyone should just do what they can. So PSC the Children is one way.
Madeleine, earlier you talked about how, you know, when you went out, did these talks, organized these events, people would come up to you and, you know, and say that they were, you know, as you say, either victims of or they knew a victim. Why in the first place were the talks happening? Was it kind of something that happened organically? Was it just something where you were like, okay, this is something I want to do, let's kickstart it, before it formalized?
Well, we did preventive work, which means actually creating awareness on what is sex abuse. That was the first thing, because when we first started, people would say that there's no sex abuse in the country, right? And the more we go out and we say, look, this is sex abuse, and there's also a lot of misconception about sex abuse, right? What is sex abuse? Who are the sex offenders? How does he function, you know? These were the talks that we were doing. And there was just a lot of taboo. I mean, people were not talking about it. You know, reporters would say child abuse, and child abuse and sex abuse is very, very different. So we started off with just educating anybody and everyone, all the adults, right? Telling them that, hello, 85% of your sex offenders are people you know. It's not the stranger danger, you know, that everyone thinks about. Yeah.
Shireen, what are the programs that you run at PS the Children?
Like Madeleine says, we offer talks to anyone who's interested. So PSC can come in and they can talk to your organization. Just a short half-day talk. If you're more interested and you want to carry it further, we have workshops that last up to 2 whole days. And there are different workshops. There are those geared towards adults, you know, parents, all stakeholders, teachers, the police, whatever. And then you need to have the talks and the workshops for children as well. And those come for different age levels. What's appropriate for different ages. So they need to learn about personal safety. What's right, what's appropriate, touching, saying, you know, all that sort of thing. And then they have to learn how to keep themselves safe. And if something is happening, they have to learn how to say no, how to run, and how to tell. Tell someone, tell an adult, and keep themselves safe.
By and large, when does it extend to, you know, beyond the initial talk, who are the people who are choosing to say, like, come, let's keep the conversation going, let's do the workshop, let's, you know, extend this?
We do a lot of trainings. Actually, if it goes beyond the talk, after, you know, we do training of trainers. So we would train the authorities. We would train different national organizations. So, you know, people dealing with the Deaf Association, you know, and other different organizations, women's organizations, teachers, doctors, nurses. So these are some of the things that we do, because the more people understand, you know, the better it is. And it is, we've actually gotten a lot of organizations to also adopt child protection, this component of sex abuse, in their programs, right? So there are a few children's organizations that actually now incorporate this component in their organization, which is great.
How do you assess the efficacy of the work that you're doing?
We have a monitoring and evaluation process in all our programs. There are pre-post tests. Actually, we also interview children. We also interview the adults. what is before and after? Is there a change in behavior, right? The other way of actually also measuring success is actually disclosures. The more people disclose, you know that we have created a safe environment for somebody to come up and say, hey, you know, I've been sexually abused. That takes a lot of courage. The other thing is also there are a lot more trainers now, right? So how do we know that we are effective? Is because, you know, child protection, there's a child protection policy, which you never had. Change in laws, child protection policy, personal safety is in the national preschool curriculum. That shows a lot of change, I think, in terms of the preventive programs. Yeah.
Earlier you talked about how, people still think it might be stranger danger. People still kind of say, you know, in a blanket sort of way, no, there's no child sexual abuse and it's just not happening. What are some of the other more common misconceptions about child sexual abuse?
That it doesn't happen to us. You know, it happens to other people. That it only happens to girls. That it only happens to the poor. That it only happens to the underprivileged. It doesn't. It can happen to anyone. And it often happens in a relationship of trust. So it can happen, sadly, in religious communities where you place your trust in someone. And these days, it happens a lot online where everyone is accessible. So it really can happen to anyone, and it can be from anyone. I mean, stranger danger is you know, especially on the net, is 24/7. Could be anyone. Yeah.
So abuse as offline has gone online now, right? Yeah.
And in other words, it's also gone right into your home because your kid doesn't have to leave the house anymore.
Yeah. Where they're the safest, supposedly.
Yeah. What are the possible signs then that a child is being sexually abused? What should caregivers, family members, just people in the child's life be on the lookout for?
I think the most obvious signs would be a change in behavior. If a child suddenly is withdrawn, if a child suddenly is aggressive, if a child suddenly just shows signs of being different or sad or nervous, I think all these are signs and that someone needs to reach out to them and find out what's going on. And so the best people to do this would be adults that see them regularly, teachers, parents, any kind of caregiver, really.
Yeah. Listen to them. What also is a red flag is sexualized behavior. Because especially with preschoolers, they are not exposed to, you know, sexualized behavior, right? And if someone does something that's inappropriate sexually, then it's a red flag. Yeah.
When the child starts acting up.
When the child acting up. You know, a teenager who offers her body thinking that, you know, she would get love in return and attention in return, that is a red flag, right?
These are red flags that happen once sexual abuse is already occurring or has already occurred. However, there are things that happen, you know, very unfortunately, things like grooming, as we saw in the case recently in the news of that footballer in the United Kingdom. So are there signs then to look out for so that you can try and nip it in the bud, so that you can try and prevent it before sexual abuse actually occurs? Because these are things that happen as reactions to sexual abuse.
Well, hopefully that will come with more preventative talks. So the children attend these talks and they know what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. So they will know when this, hopefully more and more children will realize when this is happening, hang on a minute, this isn't appropriate. This isn't right. So that has to come from the children too. But it is our responsibility to educate them. So that's what the preventative talks are all about.
And it's also really listening to children, because sometimes children will say, oh, you know what, I'm not comfortable with uncle, right? I don't want to go there. These are some of the things. He touched my toe and I'm not comfortable. So these are some of the indicators. You want to start listening to children, because 85% of sex offenders are people you know. And you're right, you know, in terms of grooming, the alleged offender or the sex offender basically befriends the adult, right? He is somebody who is well known in the society. The only way you will actually know about this is actually to listen to the child, because the child will give indicators saying that I'm not comfortable, I'm not comfortable the way he touches me, right?
Considering that abusers are often people you know, often people who have forged this relationship with the adults in your life, does that make it harder for a child or family member to report an abuse? I mean, how do you create an atmosphere or a relationship where they know that you can be trusted? They can tell you this and you're not going to say, no, uncle's fine, you know, uncle's a good friend.
Education. I mean, that's where it is. You know, we can't express anything, how important education is, because you're right. I mean, as much as we have the personal safety program for children to equip them with knowledge and skills, at the end of the day, we still give the message that adults are the protectors and you are really the one to listen to children because they're going to come back to you. Yeah.
I'm speaking today with Madeline Yeong and Shireen Zainuddin, both from Protect and Save the Children. We're talking about the work that they do in terms of educating communities about child sexual abuse. Up next, we talk about recovery from it. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Madeline Yeong, founder and board member, as well as Shireen Zainuddin, board member of Protect and Save the Children, a Malaysian NGO that works to educate communities about child sexual abuse. And that's what we've been talking about, the work that you do. Rape and child sexual abuses are two of the most underreported crimes, I think, for all the reasons that we've just talked about. You know, it's really hard to come forward. It's a taboo subject. It's difficult to talk about. How often do children step forward and report abuse?
Pretty often, actually. In our programs, we will always get a disclosure. There has an increase in reporting, which means children have more courage and also the adults have a lot more courage. The other thing about sex abuse, I mean, rape, there's evidence, there's forensic evidence, so it's really easy. But when it comes to child sexual abuse, if it's a younger child, if it's a preschooler, if it's molestation, then that's a really difficult case to take through the reporting process, yeah. Then there's also sodomy, right? We are always protecting the girl child. 50% of survivors are actually boys. So, you know, and again, you know, for a boy to actually step up to say, you know, he's been sodomized or forced to do an inappropriate sexual touch, it's really difficult for the child to do that. Yeah. So a lot, especially when it comes to teenagers will not, if they do not have a really good relationship with their family, they would always tell their friend. So it's also, you know, so there are a lot of disclosures. The problem here is not so much whether the child comes out, but what happens after that. If a child tells us that they've been sexually abused, right? What are some of the things that we do, that two things that we offer is either we support them through the reporting process, which so that the child will not be re-victimized, or we offer them therapeutic support. And that is a specialized area. It's really difficult to find resources for somebody who not only are you trained as a psychologist, but who, you know, knows how to work with children and in the area of sex abuse. So that is a specialized area that is difficult to come by. There is a lack, there's a gap in the system in the sense that there still isn't rehabilitation programs for young sex offenders. So if the boy is 12 years old and he, you know, touches a 5-year-old girl, that 12-year-old boy, there really isn't any rehabilitation program. Let alone, I mean, sex offenders, adult sex offenders. So that one is a gap in society.
What's the reporting process like? You know, so once somebody has alerted, you know, their parent or just have said, you know, this has happened, and then they enter the official system of having to report this crime, what's that like for a child?
It's tedious. I would say it's really tedious, and it's also... one of the things we always train adults to do is prepare the child for the next step. It's the fear of the unknown, right? A child who has been abused for, say, several years or several months, they're familiar. They know abuse is going to happen. They know what to do with the sex offender. But what they do not know is if I were to open my mouth and tell somebody that something has happened, what is going to happen? That fear of the unknown keeps the child from telling and disclosing. So what happens, all our cases are very, very different. It also depends on the dynamics and how old the child is. If the child is a preschooler and doesn't have vocabulary, then it's really, really difficult because the child still has to be able to inform the authorities, the police, what actually happened. There, where is that there? You know, it came out, what came out, right? So these are, they need to be very specific. So the police, they are very important in terms of interviewing the child. The other thing is that the child will also have to go through the general hospitals right near the house, and there will be at least like four medical professions looking at the child in terms of, you know, pediatrician, the psychiatrist, yeah, medical social worker, looking for forensic evidence. But on the other hand, not everything has forensic evidence. Oral sex, right? Molestation, they don't have forensic evidence. And that, you will rely on the testimony of the child. So again, if the child is young, if the child is a disabled child, disability, that is going to be a problem. If the child speaks Chinese only, and we go to the authorities and they only speak Bahasa, or if the child is, you know, vernacular language is Tamil, right? Or sign language. So these are all the challenges. If the child is not safe and it's in an incestuous family, then it's welfare will intervene. But somehow or other, welfare should intervene, whether the family, you know, is there or not, right? So these are the main group, the police, the hospitals. There's the scan team there and the one-stop crisis center. And then there's the social worker. So can you imagine having to deal with all of these people that you don't know and having to tell your story over and over again and having to, you know, identify who, you know, the offender is and identify the place, the crime scene? It is not easy, not easy at all.
And through it all, once you emerge out the other end, hopefully with some justice being served, PSC also supports survivors. Could you share what goes on in the recovery process?
Okay, so what happens is we actually take them through the reporting system. So we're there with them, you know, with the authorities, ensuring them that, you know, informing them what the steps. Then we also have, we do play therapy. So there will be a therapist who will be working with the child, and there will be a counsellor or a psychologist who will be working with the non-offending parent, because the non-offending parent is also really traumatised by what actually happened, right? So that's what we offer. And then the other thing that we also do is that if it goes to court, let's just say the case is strong enough to go to court, we prepare the child for court. You know, we take them through to see the public prosecutor, yeah, and inform them. We've actually got a court workbook to prepare children for court so that they, you know, it's just to remove the fear of the unknown.
With so many aspects of education coming into play, you know, of first protecting and then of understanding also, should this happen to you, this is the whole process. I mean, it's a long thing and it's a lot of things to be teaching children about. Should it be incorporated into our education system in one form or another?
Well, yes, it should, and that's what we're hoping will happen, and we're pushing for. It isn't at the moment, except for at preschool level, and I think it is incorporated into the national preschool level curriculum under Kesihatan.
Yeah. The Ministry of Education, I don't like to use the word should, but they should. Okay. I mean, really, at the end of the day, actually, the program for children is really fun. They don't even know that it's a preventive program. They don't know, right? It's not scary. It's fun.
They don't have to know.
They don't need to know. We are giving them skills. We know, like decision-making skills, right? It's the adults. So, yes, you know, it would be great if the Ministry of Education adopts this in their curriculum as part of the sexuality education. It would be fantastic if all the authorities have it in their college, the child protection, right? if you want to be a police or you want to be a doctor and if you want to be a nurse or a teacher, you go through this whole child protection training so that everyone comes out, you know, you're equipped. You're equipped to identify the signs, you're equipped to know what to do, and you're equipped to be able to be able to support the child in its best interest.
I guess what's happening is you're equipping people to tell their story, but also people to hear the stories of others and understand what's being told.
We are equipping adults so that they will put children first, right? They will not react, and they will look at it from the perspective of children, the child, which is really important. For example, I'll give you an example. One of the questions we always ask the adults is, would you impose death penalty, right? If the sex offender, and most adults will say, yes, let's kill him, that sort of thing. And it comes from them and their anger. But if you look at the grooming process, as you rightly said, a lot of children are groomed, which means there's a relationship between the child and the sex offender. So does the child want what is happening to stop the abuse to stop? Yes. Does the child want her teacher, her friend or her father to die? No. Right? So again, the psyche of the child, we actually have to think a lot of programs really needs to be in the best interest of the child and not us, not the adults. Yeah.
With that said, with all the work that you're doing, and all the different, as you say, stakeholders, all the different people who will need to be involved on every level. Do you work with government agencies?
Yes, we do. The police, social welfare, various ministries. Which ministries?
We have to work with government because we can do a lot of preventive programs, like even going to schools. We work with schools and we need the approval of the Ministry of Education. Anytime when there's a report or, we actually have to work with the authorities. So we really have to work with the government.
And on that governmental level, Malaysia's finally setting up a sex offenders registry 9 years after the idea was first mooted. What are your thoughts on this?
Have they set it up?
No, they're talking about this.
Yeah. I don't know that they have set it up.
Okay.
Well, hopefully they're in the process of doing it.
We say it's good because it's needed. All right? The other thing is that the sex offenders registry is only if your sex offender is convicted. So the question now that we all have to ask is how many of our sex offenders are convicted in Malaysia? Right? In our cases, very few. So it will be good to actually have a sex offenders registry. That's important. We also are advocating for an alleged offender registry. It doesn't have to be for public. But if you have an alleged offender registry, if the offender perpetuates again and he abuses again, then he's moved on from, Kuala Lumpur to Penang or to Sabah Bernam, and he has already abused again. Which means, then you will be able to convict him if there are other people who has lodged a report, because a lot of sex offenders are now out there, scot-free.
With all this work, how much does it cost to run PSC?
Well, there are different costs. There's operational costs, the running of the office and the growing of the organization, which is really important because there's so much work to be done and we're really short on human resources. We really need more people running the organization, helping run the organization. So, I don't know, ballpark figure, I'd say about $60,000 a month just for that.
For now. The current staff. If you want to expand, if you want to do nationwide, then it has to be more. Right?
And then running programs is a whole other cost again.
How much of a challenge is fundraising?
Huge challenge, actually, because those are the two resources we are sorely lacking and mostly need: human resources and financial resources.
Correct.
So financial resources, it's huge. There are so many NGOs, very worthy ones. Everyone's competing for money. So
it is a huge challenge. You know, we've constantly got to come up with different ways to fundraise, to make fundraising sustainable.
And so that it doesn't end up taking all your time that you could be putting
exactly.
towards.
Correct, yeah. Exactly. Because there's so many things to do. I mean, we've only worked with, you know, the abled children. There's the disability group that is, again, another, you know, can of worms that we're opening up to.
And underserved.
Right? You know, and what we're trying to do is also pulling in all the child protection organizations together so that we collaborate. Yeah. For example, you know, we deal with sexual abuse and exploitation, and that's another different ballgame, sex trafficking and exploitation. Mm. But then, you know, along the way, you'll come across some children who's got problems with the law and juvenile justice, right? And then we will have to refer them to another organization. So, or drug addicts, you know, or children who's pregnant, right? There are tons and tons of issues out there when it comes to children. You know what? Children, they grow every year. So, and we cannot really wait and say, stop growing, you know, until we get our act together. Really getting, you know, issues. If we really want to prevent, we really need all these gaps sealed now, because we are actually getting into those when they become adults and you have no services, it's even harder, more difficult to rehabilitate.
Well, coming back to fundraising, the Malaysian Women's Marathon is taking place on March 6th. A team of concerned women are taking part to raise funds for PSC. Can you give us more information?
Yes, I mean, that came out of needing to raise funds. And I knew that Malaysian Women's Marathon was happening on March the 6th, and we were looking for a way to fundraise. I was actually running in that, which I'm actually not now because I'll have to be away that weekend. So what I got was a group of women runners together, and I said, who I knew would be running in the Malaysian Women's Marathon, and I said, would you run for PSC? Could we have a platform here to raise funds for PSC? And they were all very, very happy to do it. And more women joined the group, the team. Some of them are not runners. They just wanted to raise money, and this was a great way to do it. It really is a real challenge for some of them. And so it was born, you know, and it's been great. I mean, the response has been very good. I mean, it could always be better, but it's been very... it's been very encouraging so far.
Yeah. I mean, it has been very encouraging to see, you know, everybody contributing to it, even children themselves, right?
Yeah, coming. You know, children are coming forward with their pocket money, with their angpaos. Children are, you know, we had two 10-year-olds come in, and they had, they sewed ornaments and cushions, and they sold them and raised money. So it's great. And also, I think the whole fundraising thing, as opposed to, a corporate donation, is that it really gets awareness out there. It really gets the community talking about it and coming together. And that's what we want. We want people to talk about it. We want people to know why they're doing this.
How can the public get in touch and contribute?
We have a site, actually, for the fundraising for the Malaysian Women's Marathon. We have a platform on simplygiving.com/almostfearlessmwm2016. So you can click on that, and it brings you to our page, and you can donate that way, either through credit card or bank transfer. Or you can just call us at PS the Children. Our phone number is 03-7957-4344. Or, you know, have a look at our website, which is psthechildren.org.my.
What types of contribution do you need most before we sign off?
Everything.
Okay, human resources and finance.
Yes.
Really, just human
Those
resources.
Two.
Someone who's skilled, you know, to be able to contribute to, you know, programs for children. Yeah.
And we need money for that, so hand in hand.
It's a chicken and egg.
Yes, it's a chicken and egg, yeah, right.
Thank you both very much for coming in. I've been speaking with Madeline Young, founder and board member, and Shireen Zainuddin, board member of Protect and Save the Children, and we've been talking about the work that they do in terms of educating communities about child sexual abuse. You have been listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.